Hiya, Niall. Here we are, another episode of In Your Nature podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to these very much, Ricky. Great to be chatting to you again. And I, as always, thanks to all of our listeners. We get great feedback about this podcast. It's really nice to know that while you and I are enjoying our chats and chatting about birds, which is something we'd be doing anyway, even if we weren't recording it, it's really nice to know that people who are eavesdropping on us are enjoying it. So thanks for your feedback and for your support. It really means a lot to us. And just to start by saying, the In Your Nature podcast is produced in partnership with the Heritage Offices of Laois and Offaly County Councils, supported by the Heritage Council and the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage. And it's edited by Anne-Marie Kelly.
Our listeners really tend to like the bird audio that we put into our podcasts. So they'll especially like this episode because today I interviewed during the week Sean Renan of Irish Wildlife Sounds. And he is a guy who he's an environmental consultant, lifelong birder from Cork, but he's super stoked and excited and interested in wildlife sounds and bird sound. And he's basically spent the last few years trying to record as many species and in as many situations and natural soundscapes as possible. And he sent me on a sort of a library of different recordings that we're going to talk through in the interview. So it's a really nice project. He has some lovely stuff there.
Yes, so Birdwatch Ireland members may know Sean from some of the articles he's written for our membership magazine, Wings. He's written some really lovely pieces for us that we had these QR codes in where people could use their phones to access some of the recordings. And it was really nice to have this interactive element to our magazine. So really grateful to him for doing that. And we got probably the best feedback in many years on an article that we've had. It was from Sean's one. So he's a really, really good communicator. And finding out really amazing stuff with some of these migration sort of stations he has up, monitoring the birds flying over and getting these calls, finding birds coming and passing through Ireland that we never would have known were there. So it really is remarkable stuff. So really looking forward to listening to what he has to say to us.
Absolutely. And very timely as it's spring and dawn chorus is sort of kicking off and getting into full swing now. So before we get chatting proper, we're going to cut to your first audio track and we'll have a quick listen there. So that, Sean, to me, first time hearing that last week when you sent it to me, lovely wetland scene, early morning, lots of ducks and geese, there's little grebe there, coot, and then what I thought was a grasshopper warbler sort of after a can of Red Bull, but you you since corrected me, it was a Savvy's warbler. So where was that audio recorded and what was the situation?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a backstory to this actually. So I was living in Catalonia for close to 3 years. My partner is Catalan, so she's from close to Barcelona. And she was actually going to visit a friend in Portugal at the time, so she was away for the weekend. And I was sitting at home and I was thinking, Jesus, what am I doing? It was about 10 o'clock at night and I decided, you know what, I'm going to go birding through the night and see what happens. So I got in my car and I drove about 2.5 hours south down to a place called the Ebro Delta. It was pitch black when I arrived and I said, sure, look, I'll go around and see what I can hear. And it was absolutely brilliant. So normally it's quite a busy area with birders and tourists. It's a vast wetland area full of rice fields and canals and all sorts of interesting water bodies and reed beds. So I just went around and started listening and I heard all sorts going over. And just at sunrise, I came to this big tower, I suppose, overlooking this massive reed bed, and it just all started to kick off, and I knew that this was, you know, this was the moment. So I set up the tripod and I put my parabola on and I just let it run, and it just unfolded right in front of me. And I think still to this day this is my favorite sound recording, and it was just amazing. So what you can hear, it starts off with little grebe. You've got zitting cistacola, you've got reed buntings in there, kingfisher, you've got purple swan pen, a big flock of flamingo. Then you've got the Savvy's warbler, which was actually surprising because it was quite early, I think. I can't remember exactly when. It was early March. So the shell duck in there, house sparrow, yellow-legged gull, grey crested grebe. And I've just never heard anything quite like it since then. And it's I think this was the moment where I really fell in love with sound recording, really.
What I thought was the coot was obviously that purple... Purple Swamp Hen.
It's a great place for them. They're very prehistoric sounding, almost bellowing.
Yeah.
It's a great sound.
You're Sean Renan and your Irish Wildlife Sounds. And tell me what that is and what's involved and how you got into it and what's the crack?
Yeah, so I mean, I've always been interested in sound from a very young age because my father is a birder as well. So when I was very young, he used to bring me out into the countryside in the pram, and he used to imitate bird sounds to me. So ever since I was very small, I had an interest in that side of things. And then later on, when I started to take birding, a lot more seriously, I came to befriend a guy called Harry Hussey, who I always looked up to in terms of his ability to identify bird sounds. You know, it really impressed me at the time, and I used to look at it like almost like a superpower, how he used to be able to identify, you know, birds flying over. And at the time, I wouldn't have known those calls, and I was thinking, oh my God, how has he done that? And it just kind of grew from there. And when I moved to Catalonia, then I found myself surrounded by lots of different bird sounds that I just didn't recognize, and I wanted to learn them. So I got myself a little recorder, and I started to record them and then play it back in the house and try to figure out what it was that I had heard. And it just spiraled from there, really. And it just went on. And when I came back to Ireland, then I was just so engrossed in this. I really wanted to do something back home because, there wasn't really any resource apart from Xenocanto, and there were very few recordings uploaded. So I decided to start my own little mission and keep myself occupied and just try to record all of the regularly occurring bird sounds, and that was the basis of Irish Wildlife Sounds.
It's great to hear that you didn't lick it off a stone, that you're influenced by your dad. That's really nice. And Harry Hussey, who's a Cork legend, yeah, and a twitching sort of legend, and he's really well known around the place. It's great because he puts up a good bit of audio himself. And
there was one other major influence, and that was the Sound Approach, Magnus Robb. So I actually went to see a talk given by Magnus Robb, and that just sealed the deal, really. And I started recording Nocturnal Migration on my balcony, and that was it.
Yeah, and we'll talk a bit about Nocmig, as it's called, in a few minutes as well. That's cool. So from the first track, we're going now to, which was a lovely morning sort of soundscape, we're going to go to a nocturnal one, and we'll have a quick listen. So there we have an owl species, and we've got a fox barking in the background as well. And that, to me, is the most nocturnal sound of it all. And the owl involved is a short-eared owl, which a lot of people consider as a diurnal owl. It's a day-flying owl as well. But obviously, they're owls. They do get around at nighttime as well. So where was that? And was it difficult? I mean, you got the wing beats there. That can't be an easy sound to record.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one because I wasn't present to make this recording. So it's actually made with an autonomous recording device. It's an SM4 Mini, and I have this running in coastal Wexford. So close enough to Ladies Island, I have a permanent device there that runs from sunset to about 2 hours after sunrise every night of the year. So it's permanent. It's a permanently manned station. So what I do is I collect, once a month, I collect the memory card and the batteries, so I replaced both of those, and it just keeps ticking over. So this was one of the big surprises from that, because up until this recording, there were no recordings of short-eared owl from Ireland, so I was really happy with this. I wasn't familiar with the sound, I've got to be honest, because it's just not something you really hear. But I did hear it there one evening when I collected the recorder. And when I heard it, I was thinking, God, I hope that this is going to be on this batch when I collect it. And so this is what you're hearing here. So it starts off with just a single clap. And then what happens is you have a fox So there's two. There's actually two types of vocalization given by Fox there. One of them is aptly named "Wow Wow Wow." So what's going on here is it's early winter and the foxes are, you know, they're in season, so they're advertising and they're talking back and forth to each other. And you have another vocalization then, and it's called a vixen scream. So this is a vixen basically calling to say that she's, you know, she's available and she's looking for a partner.
Excellent. It was, but the foxes were interacting with each other rather than, like, you don't think the short-eared owl was sort of responding or not responding, but reacting to the fox's presence.
It might have been, you know, because I actually took a few recordings from this, and it often, more often than not, happened to overlap with the foxes, and I wondered, did the fox set them off? So you can hear afterwards as well. There's a, like, I think it's a triple clap. It's a really fast, rapid clap, which is typical of short-eared owl, and then it has this kind of like this barking sound.
You mentioned there that you didn't immediately recognize the sound, and like how often that must happen? Pretty often that you're just like bamboozled to figure out what it is.
Yeah, it happens with nocturnal migration recordings. Like obviously you're not there, so you're reviewing things from home, and you've just kind of got to eliminate things and use some logic. Like think about the habitat that you're recording in. Look at the time of year. Look for clues. Was there something, you know, a more familiar call before or after this call? What kind of species would you expect there? Start looking into, you know, what does it remind you of? Okay, this is clearly an owl. It's not barn owl. And then you just work like that and you start eliminating things. And you can actually use the sonogram visually as well to really help you out. So, yeah, there's a method to it. You know, there's a way of getting around it.
You mentioned some of the equipment there. So what's like, what kind of stuff do you use? I mean, it's probably pretty technical now. I've seen some of the stuff in the wildlife recording catalogues and like some of the mics and all are pretty sort of serious pieces of kit.
Yeah,
expensive.
I mean, I use a whole range of stuff. Some of the things that I use are really cheap and some of them, you know, would cost a little bit more money. So I started out with an Olympus LS12 handheld recorder. They're discontinued now. They're a brilliant little thing. I picked it up for €90. You can get them secondhand still. After that, then I got a dot. I stepped up to a Dotatronic high sound stereo parabola, which is absolutely brilliant. The sound out of it, it's probably the piece of kit that I use the most, because what it does is it amplifies and it isolates the sound. So if you point that at a blackbird singing and there's some other birds, like I say a wood pigeon and a robin singing to the left or right, it'll muffle out those sounds and it'll focus in on the blackbird and kind of punch it out. So it's really good for isolating you know, single birds to really get a nice profile of the song or the call of that bird. And then you have the autonomous devices. So I use an SM4 mini, which is I don't know, it's about the size of your hand, an open hand. That takes six batteries, and it can I put in a 256 gigabyte memory card. It's completely waterproof. It's stereo, so I can just leave that out and it'll run away every night for 6 weeks, and the sound quality out of that's superb. There's another autonomous device called an AudioMot, and you can pick them up after taxes and postage and all that. It usually comes out at around €80 or €90, and they're the size of a matchbox. They're not waterproof, but you can make them waterproof very easily. You just put them in a little Ziploc bag, and they'll run for about 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. So they're a brilliant little piece of kit. So I use them as scouts before I put in the SM4 mini usually. And I've just ordered some new equipment now. So I'm looking at kind of recording soundscapes of particular habitats or well-known birding sites. And what I want to do is create hour-long tracks, kind of immersive tracks at dawn, just to get a snapshot of the soundscape of these places to use for studying, you know, driving in the car, background music to relax, and just as a record for these things. Like I listen to these all the time when I'm studying, and you know, so there's no, it's not like a song, there's no words to distract you. It's just a kind of a gentle background hum of bird song, and it's just brilliant.
You could sell those tracks to one of those meditation sort of apps or one of those things. You could make a fortune.
Yeah.
They're nice. Yeah. And so the next track is So we've listened to sort of various soundscapes there. So next one is a single species.
Yeah.
But it's a single species that can make an awful lot of sound on its own and an awful lot of sounds. Mm-hmm. Various phrases and notes and mimicry as well. So it's the starling. So let's go over to that track. Yeah, wow. So, like, there's a lot going on there for a single bird. Like, I think people hearing that for the first time that I've never heard a starling would be in a little bit of disbelief that that's coming from all one bird and literally one individual. And you'll hear more because you're more expert in it than I do. But tell us how many species are in there, do you reckon?
Mimic species. This starling lived in the roof above my house, and I think when I went through, like, this is just one of several clips, I think it mimics over 20 species anyway. Not all of them birds, some mammals. So it mimics fox, and it even mimics me. It puts on a Cork accent and it says, "Come here." So copying me calling the dog in from the garden. But in this track, I think there's fox, so a vixen scream. There's reed bunting, jackdaw, rook, kestrel, and maybe one or two more. But it was fascinating to listen to this bird because I was simultaneously recording each night in this just under the roof there to monitor birds that were moving at nighttime. And this bird would change its mimicry to reflect what was trending flying over each night, or not each night, but over the season. So yeah, it started to change the mimetic repertoire as the weeks went on. So when snipe were really pushing through, it was starting to mimic snipe. When the golden plover started to appear a week or two later, golden plover started to appear in the mimicry. So it was amazing. And in a sense, I suppose, it almost suggests that they're potentially listening at night time, or else very early in the morning, just as the sun is coming up when these birds are still going over. But yeah, it was fascinating.
Yeah, well, if you ever pass like a bush or whatever and there's a few starlings roosting in it, they always seem to be active even in the middle of the night. They're chattering away, so they probably are listening in sort of dead of night. But there's a guy here at the minute, a starling, and he's one of the breeding pairs that's always here, but he's flat out doing buzzard, that mew call.
Oh, yeah.
And he also doing swift. He's after catching me out a few times doing early swift, so I keep on like sort of stalling going, geez, that's early. And then I realise it's this fella on the edge of the shed. So the repertoire is just massive. It's yeah. So deep, and they're incredible. They're really, really exciting birds. I really love them.
Yeah.
You're obviously stacking up hundreds and if not thousands of files. Like, where did it go? Where did it live? What is the use for them? Like, other than you just being like a sort of bird audio nerd, like, what are the uses for these? Yeah. What's the practical use?
The first port anyway is my own desktop. So I have several hard drives. I've had a few incidents in the past where I lost quite a bit of data. So I'm I'd say almost over the top now with multiple hard drives. After that, then they go up to Xenocanto, which is an amazing online resource that anyone can upload to, and it just contains bird sounds uploaded by people from all over the world.
Yeah, so to qualify that, Xenocanto is basically a bird audio library online, and it's free. And you type in the species, the Latin name or the common name, and it just presents you with a list of calls and song and audio tracks, and you can download them or you can just listen to them.
Yeah, fabulous. And you can filter it by country, filter it by, you know, site or county or whatever you want, recordist. You can look at the quality rating, you know, I think it goes from A to E. So if you're looking for really high quality sounds, they're on there. Yeah, it's got everything really. So I upload to there because, like, when I was learning bird sound over the years, I found this a brilliant resource. So if I saw a bird and I was thinking, God, I wonder what that actually sounds like, I'd go straight to Xenocanto, I'd look it up, and I'd start to listen. I'd think, wow, okay, I'm going to listen out for that. And then I go out into the field and, you know, I'd hear it myself and I think, oh, that's brilliant. So it's an excellent way of learning. So if you're curious about a given call and you don't know what it sounds like, just look it up and you'll have hundreds of examples of it there. Like, there's a lot of work involved, but I try to post things on Twitter when if I get a moment of, you know, kind of highlights as I go along. But inevitably I want to record all of the regularly occurring species. So that's the breeding species, the wintering species, and the regular migrants, and even the regular vagrants. And hopefully then I'd like to publish something and get something out there. It's just at the moment it's just a long-term project, so I reckon it'll be another at least 2 years before I get to the point where I think I have all of those regular birds done. But I have 160 species recorded now, so I think about 50 more will do it.
Do you think you're kind of an audio twitcher then?
I kind of make a point about not just, you know, going for any rarity, even if it is an exciting bird. I kind of have a set list, so like I still have lots of common birds that I need to sort out. If a bird turned up that was rare, but I know that they're an annual species and it's something that's worth knowing and worth recording and having on record, I'll include that in that number. But these extreme rarities and the kind of fancy things that turn up from abroad, I don't seek those out. If there's one nearby and it's vocal, you know, I'm not going to walk past it. But I just have, you'd be amazed like how difficult it is even just to record our own species. I mean, things now like sparrowhawk, I still haven't recorded sparrowhawk. I still have a good few seabirds, sort of cormorant. I have no recording of cormorant. So yeah, there's plenty of work with the common species.
Another track now is what I describe as just an absolute wall of sound, or a cacophony of sound. Not the most attractive sound in the world. It's one that brings me back to, well, every summer I spend a lot of time on these colonies, and it's a very familiar sound to me. So it's the sound of a tern colony, and you can tell us about it in a minute, but we'll play it first. Yeah, yikes. So there's a lot going on there. I don't know, Arctic and common terns, and I didn't hear a sandwich there, but it might be in there. Is that in Wexford?
Yeah,
or
so
where
that's
are we?
That's Ladies Island Lake in Wexford. So I just stopped off there one evening, and yeah, I suppose you can only describe it as a wall of sound. It's quite powerful, I suppose. You know, it's a brilliant thing to witness, a tern colony.
And it sounds, yeah, it is, and it sounds quite severe, but they're like that 100% of the time. It's not when they're alarmed or when they're chilling or when the chicks are hatching. They're just constantly just making that noise. And if you've been out to Rockabill or anywhere like that where there's just hundreds of thousands of them, it's just constant. And it's like, oh, it gets a bit wearing after
a while. To me, it's like a metropolis, like a busy city. You know, everybody's doing something. Everybody's going in a different direction. They're all talking. They're all shouting at each other, bumping into each other. it's like a city in bird form, with all the noises that come with it.
It is, absolutely. The next two audios will play back to back, and they're two birds that Niall and I have discussed a few times on various podcasts, because unfortunately, they're both species of high conservation concern that we could in theory lose in this country, certainly within in mine and your lifetime. So that's the corncrake and the curlew, but they're very iconic species. The corncrake is crazy. We'll play corncrake first and then we'll go to curlew.
Thank you.
Yeah, so like corncrake's crazy. It's like, and they're tiny little birds. I think people probably think they're bigger than they are. I don't know if you got to see that bird when you recorded them, but they're normally in sort of nettles and heavy cover, but they do perch up sometimes on low perches. But that's the crake's call, and don't know what it sounds like. Some people say it sounds like sort of a, you know, something hard over a washboard or whatever. It's but they're probably that sound probably travels quite a distance. Were you like, you probably didn't need to be right beside him?
So yeah, this was actually recorded at 1 o'clock in the morning, because I was on Tory Island. It's quite an exposed place, and it was fairly breezy during the daytime, but at night time everything dropped down and people left and you know, cars stopped running around. So I knew that this was the best chance. I couldn't see it at all. It was totally dark, but it was relatively close. But what I did is I just dropped the gain in the recorder then, and what that resulted was a very clean sounding background and a very loud sounding corncrake.
Yeah, very good. And like, for you have to travel for corncrake. Yeah. Unfortunately, there's none really. There's a handful left on the mainland, but they're all on the islands now. And yeah, so Tory still wanted the stronghold. So get out there if you want to hear it. Unfortunately, I've never heard one in this country. Yeah, and then curlew, the cry of the curlew, it's sort of, well, it's now infamous, I suppose, and it's becoming more of a rare thing. And we get plenty of them in the winter, and people sort of assume that, oh, sure, just look, there's 500 of them along the coast there or whatever, it's all okay. But as a breeding species, there's less than 200 pairs. But I don't know what season you recorded that in, but if it's a summer curlew, it's definitely a rare thing.
Again, this was from an autonomous device, this one from Mizzen Head, so the extreme southwest of Ireland, in Cork. This was recorded at about 1 o'clock in the morning. It was the 24th of August, so you've got a sandwich tern calling away in the background there. This is actually a group of migrants coming in, so just arriving in at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're calling away mad. So you can hear them coming close and just kind of passing into the estuary there as they go by. So yeah, presumably these will be birds from, you know, further afield, further north, coming in for the winter, maybe even continuing to go further south in a few days' time.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned that. So a lot of birds obviously migrate at nighttime, and that's obviously a good time to record them, because they're calling away, they're communicating between themselves, to stay together and all that sort of stuff. So tell us about Vism, or, well, tell us about Knockmaig, and what it is, and just qualify it. There's a lot of people won't have heard.
Yeah,
that
so Knockmaig is a relatively recent phenomenon. Well, it's not so recent, but it's become popularized in recent years, especially in the UK and Ireland. Knockmaig is short for nocturnal migration, and what this involves is leaving an unmanned recorder run through the night, pointing up at the sky. And a lot of birds, when they're migrating at night, so they'll call to each other to keep in contact and whatnot. And your recorder will then pick this up. When the sun comes up in the morning, if you have a recorder in your garden now, for example, you pop out, you'll pick it up, you'll press stop, you upload the sound file then, and you can get some free software called Audacity. And this allows you to visualize the calls in the form of a spectrogram. And a spectrogram is unique to a given call. It's almost like a fingerprint. So what you do then is you scroll visually. Let's say you might have 6 hours, you might have 8 hours from a night, you'll just scroll through that, so you don't have to listen to the whole thing, and you'll see the sonograms whizzing past. Sometimes, a lot of the time it'll be quiet, but when a bird does come across, you'll stop, you look at the sonogram, you'll either identify it from the sonogram, or if you don't know the shapes yet, you just press play and listen to it, and you'll have it. So yeah, this is catching on now quite fast. It's very popular in the UK and in Ireland now. There's a few of us as well.
Yeah, I'd seen, I think, over the weekend there on Twitter, Mark Shorten had uploaded a Wimbrel call from over the middle of the city. I always think it's amazing that. And you hear some mad ones, and I follow some of the accounts in the UK as well, and you're getting stuff like water rail and little grebes over like big cities like Sheffield and places. Yeah. You're like, what are they doing? And it's absolutely mad.
If anyone is curious about this, I'd absolutely recommend it. And I guarantee you won't regret it. You'll get so many surprises over your garden. In the city there now, you've got Mark Shorten and Harry Hussey. So they're recording most nights in spring and autumn, and they've had all sorts of crazy things that you would just never have imagined flying over Cork City. You know, regular little grebe, regular Waterrail, Coot, Moorhen. They've had common scoter over their gardens in the middle of Cork City. Yeah, they've had sandwich tern. They've had commoner Arctic terns as well. They've had flocks of pink-footed geese. It just totally throws all of your ideas of where stuff migrate and when out the window. Knockmeag completely breaks all of those rules. Even if you have something as simple as an old phone that you're not afraid to get wet, stick it in a pot, a measuring jug, put a bit of cling film over the top, let it run for the night. Maybe you'll have to keep it running with a power bank or whatever, and you'll pick stuff up. Brian Lynch is another guy. Now he lives in Glanmire. He did that. He put out a little phone in his garden and he detected common scoter flying over his garden.
I'm going to try that because I'm literally in Leash, in the like dead centre of the country, in the dead centre Leash, and I'd be so interested to see what sort of random.
Oh, you'll definitely get some interesting records for sure.
And there'd be some like new county records because it's one of those counties that is a little bit sort of impoverished for recording.
If you want to know more about the nitty gritty details of how this all works, you can go onto my website and I've explained everything in detail and I have how to video guides and it's all on there. So IrishWildlifeSounds.com, just navigate through the menu there and you'll find the Knockmeag section and it'll tell you everything you need to know.
So give us the address again.
So that's IrishWildlifeSounds.com.
Cool. So the next one is a little bit, let's stay on the kind of nerdy side of things. I want to just discuss Subsong. And we have a recording of Red Wing sort of chatter and Subsong here. So we'll listen. What's happening here with these Red Wings?
Yeah, so like the first time I heard this sound was the winter before last. I was doing some survey work actually, and I heard this sound coming from some bushes, and I was thinking, what's that? Because I just didn't recognize it. You know, it's this strange warbling, scratchy sound, and it just didn't register with anything I was familiar with. So I went a little bit closer, and I started to listen and record and watch. And then something happened. I think it was it a raptor or something went over. It went silent and then it flew out and it was a red wing. And I was thinking, whoa, it's a red wing. I've never heard red wing singing in any form before. I just heard calls. So what I did is I saved it, uploaded it to Xenocanto and had a look at red wing song. And I realized that this wasn't song. So typical red wing song is this really fluty, melodic song, very simple song. Whereas this was very quiet. I had to go very close to hear it. And this is something that's typical of Subsong. So Subsong is usually given at a low volume and it's given from dense cover. And there's a reason for this. The reason they're doing this is because they're not territorial when they're singing and they're not wanting to draw any trouble upon themselves from local breeders. So typically you hear this from birds, that are young birds or even adults early in the season that don't have any sexual drive, so they're not looking to breed yet. They're just practicing. So that's what was happening. Sometimes Subsong is very difficult. It can be incoherent. It's like imagine someone kind of mumbling to themselves, whispering to themselves, and you're thinking, what are they saying? Subsong can be like that. But if you listen long enough and you listen closely, you can often hear a clue. Sometimes they'll throw in a little call, their typical call in amongst it, and you think, oh. So you've got to listen for clues with that. The next step up from that then is a thing called plastic song. And plastic song, it's a little bit louder than Subsong. But it's still a little bit kind of babbling. So you're starting to get the structure of the song. So you'll probably be able to identify the species much easier when it comes to plastic song. But it just sounds like, you haven't quite perfected your art yet, but you're getting there. And then the final step is crystallized song. So this is when it's fully set, it's crystallized, and this is the song that they use. They're bold, they're out in the open, they're singing it with their chest out up on top of a tree. This is the final finale.
And just to qualify that, Red Wings don't breed in this country, so we wouldn't hear their song typically. They've no reason to sing in Ireland. They'll head back up to Iceland and places, and like Sean says, put the chest out and attract a female and defend the territory and rear their young or whatever. So and that's what the Dawn Chorus is. But the Red Wings are up in sort of Iceland doing that, whilst our Blackbirds are down here doing their thing. So that's what's going on here. So the Red Wings to spend a winter in Ireland because it's less severe here. We'll have a little practice and they'll do their sub song here, but still it's not something you'd commonly come across. So it's really nice, really good recording to get. That's cool. The last one, which is a fairly recent addition to the Irish soundscape, it's a bird sound, but it's not a vocalization, and that's great spotted woodpecker drumming. Which I think is just the most fantastic sound, and it still gives me sort of, makes me so excited when I hear it in any sort of situation or location. It's just class. So we'll listen to that. Yeah, deadly. So what's the story? I presume that's a really easy sound to sort of record.
Yeah, this was on my hit list, as it were, early in the year, and I went to Killarney National Park because I knew that there were some birds drumming up there. I spent the whole morning. I almost failed, and then I heard drumming right next to me. There's no real trick to it. I mean, it's a very easy thing to record. You don't need any special settings or anything. The sound travels really well. I think I had to turn the gain down for this actually. So yeah, I just used my Dodatronic Parabola again. And yeah, you know, it's such a great sound. There's something really special about it. And I heard such an inspiring sound recording of this recently by, I don't remember who it was. It was a UK birder. And they were very creative with what they did. And you can get this kind of a microphone called a contact microphone. So this, instead of picking up sound waves, what this does is it picks up vibrations. So what he did is he stuck this contact microphone onto a tree. He obviously was familiar with his patch and he knew that a woodpecker regularly drummed this tree, say. So he strap this tiny little contact microphone onto the tree, and at the same time he put a regular microphone pointing, and he got this amazing like 3D sound of the woodpecker drumming. And what he did then is he was able to blend the two sounds, so from the contact microphone and the external regular microphone, into one sound, and I've never heard anything like it. It's such a special sound.
Sean, listen, that was deadly. Thanks for talking us through all your recordings and how it's done and why you're doing it, and it's really good to talk to you, and me and Niall are going to discuss a few more of your tracks. That'll be another episode. So really, really thanks for joining us, and good luck with the rest of your Irish Wildlife Sounds project. And I hope you get your mission accomplished to publish something, whatever the vehicle for that ends up being. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thanks a lot, Ricky. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. So, geez, Niall, there was a lot there. I mean, a lot of different soundscapes, species. I mean, Sean, like, I thought I knew my bird sound and songs and calls, but he pointed out some stuff to me in those recordings that I'd never pick up on. Like, he really has a good ear for it now.
Oh, he really does. No, I'm in awe of him. He communicates it so well as well. So it was fascinating listening to him there, and really being at the cutting edge there of what's going on in terms of monitoring of birds with the recordings and working out what's happening. And of course, birds do a lot more than just sing. There's all these different calls and then little notes that they make. It's so hard to learn all of those. And hats off to him for doing that. Really, really good. And hopefully our podcast listeners who might be fans of birdsong will have really enjoyed that. You know, now you've learned some things about it, go and enjoy the Dawn Chorus in the mornings, listen to it yourself, and you know a lot more about what's going on.
Yeah, and we have done a Dawn Chorus in the past. Our first season we did a very popular program on the Dawn Chorus, so do find that and listen back, and that was a really nice show. Plenty of audio on that as well. So the initial sounds audio in this podcast was that wetland soundscape. And what I thought was a grasshopper warbler with a can of Red Bull in it, as I said, it was actually a savvy's warbler, because it was actually recorded in Spain, and I hadn't picked up on that. It's not a species I'd be familiar with, but our own Savvy's warbler our closest thing to it is a grasshopper warbler. So I'm nominating that as the bird of the week, and Sean has provided us with a lovely audio of grasshopper warbler, or gropper for short, as birders say. So here's gropper, and we'll talk about species in a second.
Ricky, there's no mistake in that sound. I listen out for this time of year. I heard my first of the season just over the weekend there, not too far from where I'm living here in Wicklow, and it's always a thrill to hear that. And it's a bird that you certainly hear far, far more often than you see. They're the ultimate skulking LBJ, little brown job. They creep around in the bushes, in the gorse, or in the thickets, or the edge of reeds. They really don't come out into the open very much at all, but you hear that sound, and it's absolutely unmistakable. It can be surprisingly loud, and as the bird turns its head, the sound shifts. It's like a loudspeaker broadcasting it out over a wide area, and it sounds more like a little machine. It really is amazing. Some people liken it to the sound of a fishing reel and being let out very rapidly, and that rapid ticking. But there's no other bird that sounds like that within Ireland. It gets its name, the grasshopper warbler, obviously because some species of grasshopper have a similar sound. But even then, you're not going to mistake it, because the grasshoppers don't go on for such a prolonged period at such a level pitch and pace and tempo, and they don't tend to turn their heads around, of course, because grasshoppers don't make it with their heads, they make it with their legs and their wing casings. So that when the bird is turning its head, it's broadcasting, and you can really hear this dynamic change in the sound. Definitely one worth listening out for.
Yeah, it's...
But one of the things I find...
Like you said, it's super loud, and you can't... Those who can hear it can hear it, but it's on a level... That certain people can't. When you go past a certain age, it's kind of like Goldcrest. You lose the ability to hear it, whatever sort of tempo or rhythm or level or whatever it's on.
Yes, all of us, as we get older, we tend to lose our high frequency hearing ability, and the grasshopper warbler and the goldcrest, two of our highest pitched birdsongs, they're often the first to go. And I've had the experience of walking, you know, many times leading groups of bird watchers, and you hear the grasshopper warbler singing really loudly beside you, and most people are like, "Oh yeah, that's so loud," and there's people there just baffled, like, I can't hear that. Like, are you pulling my leg? But the interesting thing about that, Ricky, is when you analyze using sonograms the sound that the grasshopper warbler is actually making, we're only hearing part of it, because like most songbirds, or all songbirds indeed, grasshopper warblers have a two-chambered vocal apparatus, the syrinx or syrinx that they have, and they can produce two sounds independently, and we're only hearing one of them. So when you actually analyze it in a computer, that sound recording, you see that very fast, rapid ticking, which is a very high-pitched note. But interspersed among that, simultaneously, is another higher pitched squeaky sound that is not so frequent, but it's interspersed through that song, but it's well beyond human hearing range. And indeed, because loudspeakers and recording equipment have been designed with human hearing range in mind, some of them don't even pick it up, because there's no need for them to record those frequencies, because humans would never need to hear them. So to another grasshopper warbler, the sound is quite different to what we experience.
That's class. I didn't know that. Yeah, I think this sounds so cool. I always encounter them. They're quite widespread. They're not common. You don't find them in big densities, but it's kind of scrubby, damp areas I always come across them. But you kind of get them on the edges of bogs. You get them on sort of rough ground and I suppose what people would think is as bad farmland, rather than sort of very, very industrial sort of stuff. And Lochbure is always good for them. And like you say, with the Dawn Chorus, I've led a few there. And like you say, like two-thirds of the people in the group will hear them. But there's always one-third to be like, what is this lad talking about?
Yeah, it is the best way to find them, and one of my favourite places at this time of year to listen for them, and if you're very lucky to see them as well, is our East Coast Nature Reserve in Newcastle in County Wicklow. There's often a pair or two nesting quite close to one of our boardwalks through the wetland, so it's a great place. You can walk in the boardwalk, but you won't get near the birds, but the sound carries quite far, and they're often nesting in gorse bushes and tangles just out there among the reed beds, so it's a great place to actually hear them for yourself. And as I said, if you're extremely lucky and persistent, you might see one fly. They never really fly up high. When they fly it from bush to bush, they're very low down, and often they fly within the reeds, so you hardly notice them at all. And I said an amazing thing actually there. If people look up what this bird looks like, all the field guides will show you it's this brown streaky thing with a strangely sort of, it's almost rounded tail, still a longish tail, but more rounded than most other warblers would be, but very streaky and brown and very camouflaged. But a few years ago I was down at the East Coast Nature Reserve walking along the boardwalk, and I saw a bird dash into a bush, and I saw it was a grasshopper warbler feeding its chick, which I'd never seen before. The chick was just out of the nest, and both the parent and the youngster were vivid yellow on the chest and on the face, and brown above. I was like, what? I hadn't heard this. I looked it up. I looked up Birds of the Western Palearctic, this seminal, this sort of encyclopedia about the birds of Europe and associated regions. And it said, yeah, very rarely there is a yellow colour morph of the grasshopper warbler, which just isn't illustrated in most field guides at all. So that was an eye-opener for me, for sure.
Yeah, I've heard about the yellow morph, never even seen an image of it. So that's really interesting. And I wonder why that is, or how that came about, or what region they're from, or, you know, because we could tell like the likes of the Icelandic race of red wings and all from the sort of various, you know, slight tweaks in their plumage. But I wonder if those groppers are from a different region in Africa or whatever. So I don't know if we mentioned actually they are migrants.
Yes, they are. Yes. So they spend most of the year actually in sub-Saharan Africa. They return to us normally around April is when you start hearing them. And then that reeling sound, as we call the song, that goes particularly during the month of May. It's quite persistent. But then it trails off during the summer, because once they've nested and they've got their territory there, the male doesn't have time, you know, to waste all day singing. He has to feed those chicks and look after the nest and so on. He's already attracted in the female. So they will sing intermittently during a good portion of the summer. But April and May are really the times when you hear them at their best. Early May, I often think, is the best time to hear them. And then in the early autumn, they sort of sneak out away almost undetected. They leave the country and they head off back to sub-Saharan Africa. And we don't know too much about that journey, because unlike the swifts and the swallows that are quite visible on migration, these grasshopper warblers, they remain very skulking. They must spend the night at maybe in wetlands or reed beds or something, we don't know, but you won't find them, and when they're not actually singing, they're virtually undetectable, so we don't know too much about their migration. We just know from ringing studies that all of a sudden they turn up in Africa and then they disappear from there, and a few weeks later they turn up back here in Ireland and across the rest of Europe as well. There's lots still to be learned, but they're certainly a very strongly migratory bird.
Yeah, absolutely. No, so that's the grasshopper warbler. So do go out and try have a listen for them. Don't strain yourself trying to see them, because you just won't. And so you've got the audio there before, you're now familiar with it. So no other audio like it in this country. If you're on the continent or in North Africa, you might be getting Zitting Sistikla or Savvies, something like that you might mistake it with. But there's absolutely nothing here you can mistake it with other than a cricket, potentially. But unlikely. So thanks, Niall. Another good episode there.
Yeah, and another good season of the podcast as well. Thank you, everybody, for all your wonderful feedback. As we said, thanks for listening to us. We hope to be back again soon with another batch of episodes for you. We've plans in the pipeline, at least, but still a few things to work out with that. But really looking forward to that. Please spread the word. Share our podcast with your friends and family. If you've liked it and you've got this far into it, we'd love you to spread the word to others. And, of course, as we always say, please do join Birdwatch Ireland. I know many of you are members already, but many of you aren't. So please do join us as members. It makes a big difference. Birdwatch Ireland. .ie. As a charity, we really would appreciate your support, and that support helps us to continue these kind of outreach things and these podcasts too. So the more support that birds get, the more of this great content we'll be able to give you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks everyone for listening. Another season. We'll have a six episode season coming up in the summer. Dates to be confirmed, but keep an eye out in the usual place, our Facebook page, Twitter, all that sort of stuff. And they'll be dropped on a Monday as normal. And big thanks to our sponsors who make it possible. And the In Your Nature podcast is produced in partnership with the Heritage Offices of Laois and Offaly County Councils, supported by the Heritage Council and the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage, and is edited by Anne-Marie Kelly.